Well, we are greatly honored to have guests from the Wednesday night group. I'm so happy to see you all here. This is wonderful. Same place, exactly the same place, same air, same traffic sound. Let's do introductions around.
I'm Ellie.
Marie.
Shepherd.
Jane.
Scott.
Jim.
Samuel.
Strudia.
Janet.
Kevin.
Margaret.
Michelle.
Carolyn.
Wendy.
Christelle.
Angie. We are studying not Zen. This is not a Zen book. It's a collection of commentaries that Chogyam Trungpa, the great Tibetan teacher, made on very important and universal teaching called the Lojong, which is a set of principles, you could say, or suggestions of how to cultivate loving kindness. So, of course, it belongs to all of us. That's our subject, all of us. And this is a very interesting take on it. Kind of mysterious, some of them, and very cogent. We are taking them one by one, taking them home, and seeing how they show up in our life over a week, and then come back and share our experience and prepare for the next one. So we've come to number... I always get confused about this, but I think it is number 30. It's poisonous food, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Abandon poisonous food. Now, what do we do with that? and yet, it's very helpful. What it really means is avoid the feeling of being special, especially being special as somebody practicing spirituality, so-called. It's a suggestion that we get ahead in this country by presenting ourselves as successful, doing well, being very positive, and when we hear the Dalai Lama speak about just being a simple monk, I think, oh my goodness, he's the most important monk that there is in the whole world, and yet he calls himself a simple monk and actually lives that way. He lives the Dharma. And this is pointing to this all the way through. It's pointing to how do we live the Dharma without taking on airs, misrepresenting ourselves, getting so involved in what we think of as ourselves that we forget that our practice is about being with others, about cultivating loving kindness for all beings. So the suggestion is to develop inner solitude, to develop our practice, and not just in the Zendo, not just during retreats, but as a life. It brings up a lot of questions about how we present ourselves when people ask me, what do I do? I have a lot of trouble with that question. I don't, sometimes I really don't quite know how to answer it without feeling like I'm misrepresenting the Dharma in some way. It's new what we're doing. It's not not so common even to be so-called Buddhist. Dogen, our greatest Zen teacher, always says, wash your mouth out with soap if you call yourself a Buddhist. You're just ruining it. You're immediately causing separation. So that's what this is about, is how can we integrate ourselves as practicing loving kindness and practicing Buddha's way without making it a big deal in the culture. We're actually introducing something to the culture. We're introducing another side of some people call it a religion, and some people say it's not a religion. Some people call it spiritual, and other people say, no, it's not spiritual. It's the opposite, that Buddha touched the ground. We haven't found the right words. We haven't found the clear way to really present and expose what this is in words. But the main thing in any case is how we enact the teaching. The teaching isn't ideas. It's not thoughts. It's how we are. How we allow ourselves to freely and authentically be what we are. So I wonder how it came out for those of us who were practicing this week. If you all have something to share that came up around this subject. Marie?
So I find it useful when there's one time when it's useful to call yourself a Buddhist, and that's when the religious people come to the door. You know, and I used to do, I mean, I've changed the way I do it, and I used to kind of like, I'm a Buddhist, you know, need not apply, you don't need to come here, kind of in that way. But now I had a couple of people invite me to their church. You know, we have a church and we like to invite. And I say, you know, I'm a Buddhist, very comfortable in my faith, and I look them right in the eyes, I really appreciate you inviting me to your service. Everyone like close the door. But, you know, I think that's useful because it's information.
Yeah.
Right? That, you know, people think differently.
And they get a taste of it that's very helpful for them as well. There are kindly spiritual people behind the door. Yeah. I used to sit down with them and just talk. I used to live out in the hills, and had a sort of deck where you could sit and look out over the mountains. And sometimes I'd sit with some of those people and just have long chats and hear what they had to say. And some of them were very interested in what I had to say. So that I found was really interesting. I never went to their church. I never really quite got what they were expressing, but they were feeling it. And I appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah. Sanya?
The part of the reading this week was, I think, about the ego and trying to kind of get rid of it, I think.
Not really. No? Well, yes.
It talks about how not even to try to do that, I think. It was towards the beginning of it, maybe the second or third sentence.
It's the first sentence, that the practice of egolessness begins to become just another way of building up your ego. Then building your ego is giving up your ego. It's like eating poisonous foods. It will not work.
So that was kind of, I think, almost like a relief. Like, I mean, I think I understand it right. Like, see it, but don't even try to get rid of it. Kind of like trying to hold the water balloon and trying to grasp it, and it's just...
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, in a way, it's a good practice. If I can see it, like when it's becoming a problem, but then when we try to get rid of it, just to say I'm doing that, right?
Yes. Because then there are two of you. There's the you that wants to get rid of it, and then there's the thing you think you're getting rid of. So then you're at odds with yourself. And so much of what we do is like that. That's what is really meant by ego, is setting up somebody else on top of who's already here. We often would rather be somebody else. We often make up our self in a lot of different ways based on the things that happen to us. But we're careful to leave out the bad stuff and just polish up the good ones. And so we're too in that process. Because the truth of it is that there is just this one little self that is a part of what Suzuki Roshi always called the big self, the greater self, the whole of it. And so there isn't any separation, really. We would like to be the great self. We would like to be more important and more honored and sort of everlasting and powerful, all the things that human being cultivates in terms of mostly our fear, our feeling of being fragile, and our knowledge that we're going to die. And so we create all kinds of boundaries, you could say, or stories in order to, and then we don't like it when it gets called into consciousness. You know, oh, you're not really like that. And if we have to see that, you know, to see the truth of what we are like, which is many, many different things. Some of it very fine and some of it quite ridiculous and some of it dangerous. It's all here. It's all a part of human being. So it is a relief. Just not the truth of it. The ego is not the truth of it. So not to worry. Is that enough?
About the ego or about the whole thing?
You look dubious.
Yeah, I am. It's new. It's very new.
Yeah.
Like a new language.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That's why I'm so grateful to this, because he uses language so well.
Mm-hmm.
Our plain old casual language is how he speaks, so it makes it clearer to understand. Very helpful.
Could I ask a question?
Of course.
And the question is, just hearing you talking about ego, it often crosses my mind, why is ego so strong and compelling and believable? If it's really a figment of imagination, so to speak, why is it so important to us?
Well, we make it important when we're doing something that we're completely focused on, even if it's something simple like cutting an onion, the ego is gone. Totally gone. It only comes up in certain situations. So that's a very interesting study to make. When is the ego popping up and why? And when does it not pop up? When is samadhi so compelling that I'm not anybody anymore? We don't have to be anybody because we already are being. And most of the time when we're driving a car, when we're talking to people, it's all coming through us. But we're not doing it. It's doing us. Yeah, it's a great question, Margaret. It's a lifetime study, I think. Yes.
So, how can you differentiate the true success between the ego?
Between the ego and the self?
Yeah.
I think we create on the ego on top of the self, that it's the self that we put on what's already here.
But sometimes it's so covered, I think, the true self.
Yes. Yes. We really don't want to be seen as the true self.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a pretty picture. It's a very interesting picture. And there's deep beauty and fascination and wisdom. But we're very protective of our wisest self, our Buddha nature, you could say. And we say in Zen, we put a head on top of our head. You know, we make it more complicated than it really is. And I think it's a question of studying for each one of us where that's coming from and why we feel it's necessary. Because there are definitely times when it's not necessary at all. There's a very interesting book by an anthropologist that came out years ago called Presentation of Self in Everyday Life. And he made a study of many different cultures and how different it is depending on where you are. How different we present ourselves depending on our conditioning. So that, for instance, in most Middle Eastern countries, people talk to each other nose to nose, just about. very, very close. And when they try to speak to Americans, the American tends to back up and create the space that we have learned to prefer. And there are many examples like that, not just of space, but of language and many different ways to behave. So much of that is just our conditioning. And studying to know how it is that we've been conditioned gives us a way to look through it, look beyond it, and see what else is here.
Just checking out my understanding against something that you said, I believe, during the session, which was that we all have aspirations and things we want to do with our lives and things that we would like to become, but if we get too wrapped up in those things, we forget to be who we really are, or to know who we really are. Is it sort of the same thing here that we're talking about with the ego? The ego kind of carries us on these trips, but we don't really, we sort of can lose touch with just who we are.
Yeah.
Underneath all that.
Yes.
Stuff.
Yes. That's exactly the same.
It's not that all those other things are bad. It's just, is it? I mean, if they carry us away and we lose our moorings and we lose our relationship with our inner self, I guess. It could be.
If we don't know ourselves, and if we're not honest with ourselves, we can't be honest with anybody else either.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that creates separation.
Okay.
Then we're alone. We're really alone.
I see. So if we're honest with ourselves, then we can also be honest with other people.
Yeah.
About who we are and
exactly.
Maybe understand who they are.
Yeah. And that's how we support and help each other
mm-hmm.
through life. That's what Sangha really is about. That's what true friendship is all about. So.
But sometimes we don't know. A lot of times you don't know. Like, you know, am I doing the right thing? Am I helping that person by giving them money? Or am I hurting them rather than telling them to go work or something like
right.
that? Or, you know, doing your daughter's laundry, feeling bad for her because, you know, she wants to relax, so you do her laundry. Are you helping her or are you, you know, teaching her how to be lazy? And then you sit and question yourself and...
Yeah, it's hard. We really don't know. And we take a chance every time.
Mm-hmm.
We have to trust ourselves and trust that we know and then learn from it. You know, sometimes it's a mistake. And as they say, it's just one mistake after another. But we're trying. We're doing the best we can. And sometimes it's the right thing, you know that, and sometimes it turns out not to be.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll let you know, one way or the other. But she's of an age where you can be honest about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that she knows that you know. How the whole thing.
Well, I let her know. I tell her I'm doing it, and I know I'm not supposed to.
Yeah. Well, the next one for next week is a little bit like this. It's number 30. Thank you, Ellie. It's in Chogyam's words, it's don't be predictable. So, don't be consistent. Don't be so guileless. Don't be self-righteous. Don't set yourself up in having judgments about what you're confronting. Don't live on some kind of schedule or some kind of recipe that we know how it is and it's like this. Because the truth is, as you just said, we don't know. And we're in a much better position to approach what is approaching us as an open question mark than as coming up with already made up ideas about the way that we think things are. To admit that and be open to our ignorance is actually a very nourishing and strengthening attitude to take in our life. And it's about how we live the Dharma. That it's about how we come to the Zendo, and as Chogyam says, we get this warm, fuzzy feeling to have come and sat for Tuesday evening or Wednesday evening, and then we've done it for the week. Or maybe we have a practice where we sit for a bit every day, but then we've done it for the day. So to really examine how our practice is going and how it can be all the time, all the day, all the week, how it becomes integrated into our whole life. This is a very big challenge. And yet it's how we came to this. It's what brought us to this. So take it home. Consider it deeply. And see how it's not that I go home and keep on my robes and walk around and be, oh, Buddha! Not like that. But it's about being awake, allowing oneself to be conscious and awake and in a loving state of mind. Of maintaining that mind of loving kindness, even when things go hard for us, and to see what it takes to do that, see what keeps us from doing that, and what helps us to do it. So that's our homework. Are there questions?
I have just one more thing, and that is, I just happened to read this yesterday, and it's apparently a thought or a saying of St. Francis of Assisi, and it's something like, preach the gospel always, but only use words if you have to.
Ah, yes.
And that's kind of what you're saying.
Exactly. Oh, I like that.
I like that, too.
Mm. Yes. That's the essence of it. Words are cheap. You know? They never get there. They really point to something, but they can't, we can't say it. Well, on the wings of having just said that, I want to encourage you to have a taste of this book that I've left out here, because it's a lot of words and it's all teaching, and teaching from my contemporaries, women Soto Zen teachers. They're all Americans, a couple of Canadians. They all have a Dharma group, some of them very big ones and some of them very small ones. And they are all wise and funny and tell stories and talk about the Dharma. And we were encouraged to write in or speak or in the most ordinary kind of way, not to make it fancy and fussy, but just as we express the Dharma. And it's a lovely book. I finally, they were supposed to send the author's copies, but they haven't quite got around to it yet, so I got one from Amazon. But I'll be getting more, and I get them at a discount, so if you all are interested, you can let me know farther down the line if you're interested in a copy. I have some coming. Are there announcements?
We're going to have a business meeting next Tuesday night,
right
after our Dharma talk. So it's an open to anybody who'd like to come. Our agenda's pretty full, but if you have something pressing, you can let me know. And so we hope you can stay. And then on the 11th, Saturday, is our full day sit for October from 9 to 4. And Angie will offer Dokusan in the morning.
And a talk after lunch.
And a talk after lunch. And it's bring your own lunch.
Yeah. There are lunch places all around, too. We have enough time to do that. Well, we do a 1-minute sit to end, and then the Bodhisattva